Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we will taste wine together with experts through requests from Simply Wine and Gina Castro of City Vineyard. You'll get some basic tips on tasting wine, to pairing wine with food, and finally, some hints on storage. Let's start tasting. I'm here at Simply Wine with Sue Requests, and we're going to sit down today and taste some wine together. Sue, thanks for being with me.
Thanks for coming. We appreciate you coming.
Well, tell us, what are we going to be tasting together today?
We are tasting today the 2015 Chenin Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand.
Oh, I love New Zealand wines.
You visited New Zealand recently, didn't you?
Well, we did and had a fabulous time and tasted some fabulous wines.
I'll bet.
And the Sauvignon Blanc was one of my favorites.
I'll bet. It's wonderful. It's kind of their trademark wine.
It is. It's, I think, what put them on the map.
Yeah.
So why don't we begin? What do we need to do?
We're going to go through the process of tasting wine. We're going to look at five different elements of it. And the first one is sight. So we're going to look at this wine and determine if it is clear or cloudy, and that will help us decide whether it's been filtered or what process the wine has been through.
So what we do is we tip the wine glass and let the wine kind of spill up to the top, and so we get a better view of it.
Right, correct.
Okay, and so what do you see?
And this is a very clear, bright wine.
Yeah, it really is. It's just shiny.
It is. No sediments at all.
And you can see it reflects light from above.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. Nice and clean and crisp.
Correct.
What next?
And then we're going to tip it up and look at the color of the wine.
And what color do you see?
In this color, I see a really light pale gold.
Yeah, it very much is. That very, very light yellow.
Yes, very reflective. So this is a very clean, beautiful wine.
Yeah.
And then we're going to take a smell. So we want to swirl the wine in the glass. And what that does is it coats the side of the wine glass with the wine.
Yes.
And we know that alcohol evaporates. So when we stick our nose, and we're going to stick our whole nose in there and take a nice, deep, controlled breath, and that alcohol is going to evaporate off the side of the glass and go straight up our nose, and we'll be able to smell what's going on in this glass.
And I always somewhat visualize that somewhat the aromatic molecules get lifted up by the air.
So, that's cool.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead.
Let's take a sniff. And I smell lots of grass, fresh cut grass.
I know, and citrus is in there. A little bit of the ocean.
A little bit of saline, yep.
Yeah.
And some mineral.
Yeah, definitely in there. Just really clean and bright, as though we're just standing in a field.
Exactly.
In New Zealand.
I know, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, that would be great.
All right.
So then what we look for is fruit and then non-fruit qualities in the wine.
Okay.
So let's start with fruit.
Okay. So let's take a taste.
Yeah, that's just summer in a glass.
It is. It's beautiful. And I get lots of citrus right up front. I get
definitely
lots of citrus.
That lime, lemon thing going.
Mm-hmm. Grapefruit.
Yeah, definitely grapefruit zest. Mm-hmm. But that's the characteristic of a Sauvignon Blanc is usually that citrus and
it
grapefruit.
Is. Mm-hmm.
There is a touch of minerality, I think, in there.
There is. Mm-hmm. And some stone.
Yeah, there
wet
is.
Stone.
So it goes back to that being by the ocean and being by the rocks.
Exactly.
And this, I would say, just a touch of grass.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, we smelled it more than we tasted.
We did. And then none of the off-putting flavors of Sauvignon Blanc, because Sauvignon Blanc can be a really strong wine, and this doesn't have any of the kind of strong off-putting flavors that you sometimes get.
Well, a lot of times descriptors in Sauvignon Blanc could be gooseberry, and I love the cat pee one, that it actually has, characteristics like that. But this one doesn't.
It does not.
It's clean and refreshing.
It does not. Which kind of helps us to talk about the flavors that, where do we get these descriptive flavors from? Because you talk about cat pee. Do they put cat pee in the wine?
I hope not.
They do not. These are just flavors that occur to us. They're flavors from our childhood or from our adulthood or from our travels or things that really resonate with us.
Yeah.
And that we can use to describe the flavors of the wine.
Well, and it provides language, so someone who comes into your store can potentially say, hey, I've tasted this wine that has apples and honey, and it may have a little oak flavor, and you may be able to direct that person to that particular wine.
Exactly.
So it's almost a creating of a language. So no, those actual flavors aren't added to a wine. They develop as it ferments and ages.
Right.
So
exactly.
Which is really cool. So now let's talk about a finish.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times it's that flavor that lingers on your palate after you taste the wine. And sometimes in certain wines, it can be really long, it'd be short. It just leaves that great aftertaste on your tongue.
Right.
So how does this finish?
And this one, I would say, has a light finish. So this particular wine has some acid in it, and that acid actually cleans your palate just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So just by means of that, it's not going to have a long finish. It's not going to linger for a long time. It's going to be kind of a cleansing type of wine.
Well, which is a good thing, because a lot of times acid just makes your mouth salivate.
It does.
And your mouth salivates, you're really, really looking forward to that bite of food or
exactly.
what you're going to actually eat next.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really good sign of a wine.
Agreed,
yeah.
Yes.
So this one has a real crisp finish. So talking about food, what food do you think would go with this?
This is such a wonderful wine. I think with that acid, we could talk about some of the soft kind of fatty cheeses, maybe a triple cream, maybe a brie, any of those French cheeses, or a goat cheese, fresh goat cheese,
right.
or an aged goat cheese like a Humboldt Fog, or fish. Anything that you would squeeze a lemon on, you could definitely eat with this wine.
And things like sashimi and sushi, I think, even though it's
wonderful.
Not quite lemon or lime, but would go really well. Also Thai spices, because I think that this actually could, the acidity can add a cut into those
right.
strong spices.
Right.
And of course it matches things like lemongrass and galangal.
Exactly.
A little bit, and goes well with that.
You'd have to be a little bit careful with anything that had some vinegar with
okay.
this wine, because that could really, that the acid in the vinegar and the acid in this wine could really bounce off each other and make kind of an unpleasant experience if you weren't
So
careful.
With that salad, in some ways, you could almost match the flavors that you find in this wine. So using lime juice or lemon juice with a little olive oil could actually be a great salad dressing.
Exactly, rather than a balsamic.
Right,
Agreed.
Right. Yeah, so it would be great.
Yeah, and you could just sit on the patio and drink it.
That would be good. We should do that sometime.
We should do that.
And, you know, and my feeling about, you know, wine with food is that I think wine should always be a part of the ingredients. It should be something that you just have together with, that you don't really need to think about
right.
it a whole lot.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. And when you just kind of take a sip, you should just have this really great yum factor to it.
Yeah. Before, during, and after.
Right. Yeah. At all times.
At all times. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
So, Sue, you have this really fancy Italian wine dispenser, and this is where this wine came from, and you keep how many wines in that?
We keep 16 wines.
And this is, what's the name of this Italian wine
dispenser? It is the Wine Emotion, and it is fantastic.
And what's the secret to this machine?
Well, this machine dispenses the wine through means of injecting food-grade nitrogen into the bottle. So the wine in the bottle never has any oxygen touch the bottle. So it doesn't degrade at all. The nitrogen actually maintains the wine. So it can sit in that Wine Emotion machine for 90 days if it needs to without ever going bad.
Which is amazing
because then we can serve some really high quality wines by the glass.
So you get to come in here and try all different varieties of wine.
Correct.
What do you have in there right now? Some of your features.
We have a little bit of everything. We have the Chenin Sauv Blanc. We have a Sancerre Rosé from France that is beautiful. We actually have cake bread Chardonnay, so you can come into
special.
The store
yes.
and get a glass of cake bread Chardonnay. And then we have a red one, too. So we have a white wine chiller side, and then we have a red wine side. And in that, we have Camus Cabernet. We have, I know. We have a Malbec from Argentina in there called the Red Schooner, which is fantastic. We have a Cote de Rhone, which is beautiful. So we have some really cool wines that you normally wouldn't get by the glass.
No, you
because
can.
A restaurant can't open a bottle and serve one glass and then waste the rest of a $50 or $100 bottle.
Well, what great opportunities for people in Billings that can come in and taste this.
Yes.
I now want to talk about someone coming into the store.
Okay.
You know, most of us are very intimidated when we walk into a wine store because we feel like we don't know a whole lot. What do you do to make a customer feel comfortable?
We have what I think is a really lighthearted atmosphere. Some wine stores try really hard to make the wine store look like a cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And if you walked into a cellar, it's dark and cold and kind of scary and intimidating. And I don't think that you need to do that. I mean, we sell our wines pretty quickly, so they don't need to be in a cellar atmosphere. They're going to somebody's house to be loved and consumed. So our atmosphere is fun. We have two sommeliers on staff.
Okay.
And a third one is working on his sommelier certification. So you just come into the store and talk to us. And we will usually, if we can, if we're not crazy busy, greet you at the door.
Yes,
and
you do.
Find out what it is you're looking for and point you in the right direction. And we have wines from $10 to $400. So we have wines to fit every budget.
So huge variety of different
wines.
Huge
variety.
And then, of course, having the wine tasting bar affords people an opportunity to taste before they buy.
Exactly.
And and you have a bistro here.
And we have a bistro. We have bistro food, so this is very fresh. We try and be organic if we can, but we have fresh greens for our salads. We have fresh mozzarella for our pizzas. We serve salads, pizzas, paninis, and gourmet cheese boards.
So you do lunch and dinner?
We do lunch and dinner. We open at 11 and we close at 8 on just the bistro side.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You bet. Thank you.
Right. Now that we have tasted a white wine, come back to the second half to experience a red. Sitting at the wine bar at City Vineyard here with Gina Castro. We're going to have this great opportunity to be able to taste some red wine with her. First, I'm going to have her introduce the wine. But Gina, thanks for being with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
What are we tasting today?
So today we're tasting the Quilt Cabernet from Napa Valley. The winemaker is Joseph Wagner. He is the grandson of Chuck Wagner, who really put Camus Vineyards. Are you familiar with Camus?
It's a fabulous wine.
Yeah, they have
iconic.
Lots of name, power, recognition. They've been around in Napa for years. Copper Cane is Joseph Wagner's project. So the Quilt is one of the wines under that label. What Joseph has been able to do with the Quilt is really hand select the vineyards that he wants the grapes to come from so that he can really build this lush, really velvety wine.
And really helps to have that connection and reputation.
Yeah.
Because the label is really cool because it does look like a quilt. It is the vineyards laid out like a map on the label itself.
Yeah, the bottle's really pretty. Put a lot of care and time into developing each label. And we're just really excited to be able to carry these wines at City Vineyard.
Well, fantastic. I take it that you're going to open us some wine?
Correct. All right. Yeah. And bonus on the Quilt is that it's a screw top.
So we don't need a cork.
No, we don't even need a
corkscrew.
I don't know if you could hear that, but it was easy to open. So
I think I can handle that.
Perfect.
Oh, and it is a very rich looking wine.
And we'll get going over the basics.
So here's a glass for you.
Thank you.
And I'll take a glass here. Where do we start?
Okay. Well, you have your bottle picked out. We poured it. We opened it. You know, that's where you want to start. But first thing you want to look at is you want to really look at the wine. The best thing to do is put it up against a white tablecloth, a white piece of paper. Just really kind of tilt your glass a little bit and just look up against white backdrop, something really light to just take time to observe that wine and look at the color. So this is a really dark ruby almost in the glass.
With touches of purple, maybe a little bit.
Yep, some purple, some violet in there. So the first part, you know, the first part of drinking wine is your eyes. You think it's all taste, but that's the first part is with your eyes. So the second part is you're gonna want to start smelling. 80 to 85% of taste is smell.
Right.
So it's really important to take your glass and what they want to do, you call it volatizing the esters.
Oh, all right. We're going to volatize.
So that really just means take the wine in your glass and just kind of spin it around, twirl it. If you're not a seasoned pro, put your glass on the table and just kind of rotate your wrist until you get a little bit of a motion
going
on. Keeps
the wine from spilling out of the glass.
Yeah. After you've done that, you really want to put your nose deep into the glass.
All right.
And then you're going to put your nose in there. Sorry if this is echoing. I don't know. But then you just want to take a deep inhale and kind of open your mouth a little bit at the same time.
Right.
That really helps open your olfactory senses and just kind of lifts it all in there.
Okay.
They say to never trust your first smell or taste. So you want to put the glass down, give your senses a second to reset, and then try it again. So swirl it around. Have any questions so far?
No.
Okay,
I'm
good.
I'm swirling.
Perfect. So swirl. Here we are. So this wine, initially, I get a really, really big burst of blackberry.
Yeah.
Almost like blackberry jam, like that sweet preserve, something like that. And I also get a little bit of, let me re-smell that. Hold on.
Yeah, I get some like dark, almost like cocoa flavors in here. And maybe some meaty notes.
Yeah, definitely. There's a little bit of like a char or something on there. So maybe...
like cold cuts.
There we go. Oh, okay,
yeah,
good.
Like that cold whole cuts. Salami type thing.
Okay, yeah. So I was getting a little bit of like a char for like an overcharred hamburger, you know, the hamburger part.
Yeah. But so when it after meat is cooked.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
I also get a little bit of a vanilla on there.
Yes. No, I like the richness, almost like that nuttiness, kind of hazelnutty type smell to it. And really, but very fruity. It's just really rich.
Great fruit. And it's really intoxicating in the smell. You know, it draws you in. It's lingering just even in my nose, and we haven't even tried any yet.
So yeah, and sometimes I find that the most fun with a wine is just smelling the aromas that come off the wine.
Definitely.
All right. So now,
okay, so cheers. Here we go.
Cheers. Let's, all right. We get to
take
taste.
A sip.
Okay, good.
So you want to take a small sip and kind of just let it sit there for a little bit.
Okay.
I always say never trust your first sip. So let it kind of sit there. Don't even start analyzing the wine yet. Don't think
just
about...
just enjoy it.
Yep, just take a sip. And, you know, we're going to do what we did with our nose. Let it reset a little bit.
Okay.
And then we're going to take another little sip and kind of let it sit on your tongue and just see what all you can get out of there. You know, if it's starting to make your mouth water, if it's chewy, just all of those sensations, and start building that description so that once you swallow the wine, then you can start talking about it.
All right, here we go. Oh, good.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so that's awesome. There's a great balance to it. There's a tinge of acid. It leaves my mouth watering a little bit in there.
I can feel the saliva in my mouth.
And the tannins are good. They suck the saliva out. Tannins, are you familiar with tannins?
And tannins build the structure in the wine.
Yep, so tannins, it's not a taste. It's a tactile sensation.
Right.
So, you know, tannins are really what kind of takes the saliva out of your mouth. So at the same time, we have that acidity that's from the wine that is making us salivate, but the tannins are taking that saliva.
And the tannins are very similar to if we chew on a tea bag.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. You can always
dry
do the
feeling
tea
in
test.
that somewhat. But this one's nice. It doesn't leave a big furry rug on my tongue.
So it has great acid, had great tannins, all those flavors that we really started to, that we smelled at the beginning. I can still, you know, they're still lingering down my palate. They're still there, which is a sign of a great wine. You want the wine to, the longer it lasts, the better quality of wine.
Well, and that's the one thing I find with red wines is that there's that sensation. That's more of the tactile, you know, where you're talking about tannins and you have, you know, these roughness or smoothness. And this is more velvety in our mouth.
Yeah, it's really nice. You know, you just, velvety is a great word.
As far as fruit or non-fruit, let's start with fruit.
Okay, so fruit, you know, I think there's a fair amount of fruit on the nose and that doesn't necessarily translate fully into the wine. I think there's a great bit of dark fruit on your palate there.
Yes.
You get that blackberry again, you get a little bit of plum, almost say more of a dried plum and dried blackberry once it's on your palate because you're getting a little raisiny feel almost, taste.
Yeah, well, when you said preserves, I thought that was a good description
because
it does. It has that warm ripeness to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So what else, aside from fruit, do you taste?
Fruit, so that vanilla that I mentioned in the palate, so you really start to taste that because of the oaking that for this wine. So as you know, you start to develop a palate and develop an understanding for those things, you can start to translate the oaking in the glass of wine. This wine uses 70% new and 30% used barrels, so you really get that toasty, warm feeling when you're having that. Some red wines that use neutral oak, they help give you a fuller mouthfeel from that, but they don't give that toasty sensation like this wine has. You know, you have took a sip of this, and I don't know about you, but I got a little warm from it, you know?
No, it has, like when you said plush, it just has that really nice, like you have been swaddling in a blanket.
Exactly.
And, you know, my always running belief is that I always believe a Cabernet Sauvignon is like an old Carhartt jacket. It just swaddles you.
Ooh,
it makes
like
you comfortable. It just protects you. So there's something about a Cabernet Sauvignon, which is also the iconic wine in Napa Valley.
Exactly. When I first got into wine, I tried really hard not to be a Napa cab girl, but here I am. I keep going back to them. Can't quit them.
Well, especially when he's now picked grapes from these great wineries, because Howl Mountain, Oakville, yeah. in those various areas, which are like the primo areas in Napa.
Exactly. They're just those highly sought after vineyards, those locations that people are paying hundreds of dollars for a bottle of Cab, where this is not, doesn't have that price point.
It's so affordable.
It is. Yeah. Affordable, approachable, and it's a great entryway to Napa. Napa wines, they're too good, you know?
Yeah, and this wine is definitely, a lot of wines will lead into storage later, and we can talk about that. But yeah. before we go there, let's talk about the finish. You know, there's mm-hmm. that lingering taste in your mouth, that feel in your mouth. Yeah. What do you taste in the finish of this
wine?
So
really the finish on this wine is, it's really balanced. So there's nothing that's overweighing one thing over the other, like that acidity, those tannins, all that structure that we talked about throughout the tasting of the wine, they all are there together. They're in harmony. So yeah. the finish lingers. It's nothing astringent, nothing harsh. Everything is just blending really well together. And that's a sign of a good wine. It's something that you want to look for. And you know that that means that it's ready to drink now. You'll certainly see the benefits of aging this for a little while, but a good sign is when all of those work in harmony, that means your wine's ready to drink.
No, so. This is really, really approachable. And yeah. I just have that blackberry preserves with vanilla in my mouth very
right.
happily.
Yep. Exactly, yeah, you get those flavors that linger, that toastiness from the oak, you get your blackberries, you get a little bit of that dried raisiny, a little bit of plum. Just really fantastic.
Yeah, it really
makes
is.
Makes me want a steak.
it would be great with a steak, which will lead me to, ooh. What do you think will go with this wine as far as food goes?
Well, you know, you can't go wrong with a Napa Cab and a steak.
Yes, and a hamburger.
We talked about that yeah. charred hamburger yes. early. So really, I think anything on the grill, because you get that char, would go yeah. great with this. You don't want to go with anything too light, not anything like a light fish or anything like that. That the wine is just going to overpower
right.
that. So you want something that's just as structured to go with this. So also like a stew would go probably
yes.
Would go
yes.
really well with
yeah.
this. Just had a lamb dish that I can't.
I was just going to think lamb yeah, chops
like
or something.
A nice toasted lamb dish would go great too. So
yeah. So those robust meats
mm-hmm, to yeah, go with the robust wine. Those sayings, if it like with like, and if it grows together, it goes together, all of those fun things, and I always take those to heart when trying to pair food with wine.
What about cheeses? I was thinking maybe a blue cheese even?
Yeah,
I think it could hang with
yeah.
that.
So the creaminess of a blue cheese would go really well against the acid structure of this wine. When it comes to cheese, you want to go with that like with like as far as textures, or the complete opposite. So if something's really, really creamy, you want something with good acid, okay. like this wine, to cut through that creaminess. So think of taking a big scoop of blue cheese and how it coats your tongue, and then the acid in this wine is just going to be able to cut right through that. So they'll both just help each other sing. Or you could go with a good cheddar,
ooh.
Like a good aged cheddar,
yes.
I think would stand up to this really well. I think Manchego would also be pretty
yeah.
good with this.
Yeah, with a couple of almonds and olives.
Yeah. Man,
really
I'm
good.
Hungry.
So let's move on. We mentioned storage. I have now brought home this bottle of wine and I didn't finish it. What do you recommend that I do with this bottle of wine, though I don't think it's going to go unfinished, but just in case.
Just in case. Well, you can use what we use at City Vineyard in our wine lounge. We have these tools called vacuvins.
Mm-hmm.
They have a little fork-like thing that you put on top of the bottle. And then the vacuvin is just essentially a little suction.
So it extracts the oxygen.
Exactly. So then you just keep pumping the vacuvin and until all the air is out, and it'll give you this extra click. And essentially that just mimics creating that seal that the cork or the screw top did, so that the wine lasts longer. You know, if it's a white wine, you want to pump it and put it in the fridge, and you can get a few extra days out of it because of the vacuvin. And reds really depends on how picky you are. You can leave them on the counter and be just fine for a day or two. It also
mm-hmm.
depends on how much you drank out of it the first sitting.
Okay.
If you just had one glass, you know, you can get a couple extra days. If you finish it all the way to almost the whole bottle, just a little bit left, you know, you're going to want to finish it the next
right.
day. And these really just help the evolution of wine, because
right.
oxygen really helps evolve.
It just slows down
exactly.
the actually oxidation and
exactly.
deterioration
so,
of the wine.
So we're big fans of those vacuvins around here when we have bottles of wine left over.
Okay. Well, how about overall storage? You know, I've now bought a whole case of various wines, and I know the wines are made differently, and winemakers also give you suggestions as to when a wine is ripe, when
yeah.
it's the best to drink it. So what do you recommend?
Well, really, you know, you just have to look at your wine consumption. If you are really starting to invest in your wine, you're really going to want to start investing in a wine chiller, something like that, cooler, to start putting that in for long-term storage, because wine is an investment. It's one of those things that appreciates over the years,
mm-hmm.
so you want to continue to store things in a way to help that appreciation.
And but, there is an optimal temperature
oh,
that
yeah.
one... Okay. Okay.
Exactly. So in your cooler, you want to go from 45 to 65, with the ideal, they say, being around 55 degrees Fahrenheit.
All right.
But if you are not into collecting wine yet or haven't gotten that far, or you're not looking for that and you're going to consume all these wines in the next couple of months, really in your house, away from areas that fluctuate in temperature a lot.
Okay.
So not in your laundry room, not in your kitchen, you know, if you have a boiler room, don't go down there. If you have a basement, that's going to be the best. If you don't have a basement, think of a closet that you don't use very often. You want to keep things away from light.
Okay,
you want to keep things
in the dark.
Yep. If you are using a closet or even just an area of your house that you don't use a lot, keep it on an interior wall. You don't want it to be on the outside where that temperature can fluctuate. Again, don't want it by the window.
What about the bottle? Does it stand up or lay on its
side?
So
you want to put the bottle on the side, keep the cork moist. That's conventional wisdom, and I'd say don't fight with what's happening for thousands of years when it comes to wine. Put it on its side to keep the cork. Humidity, people have often talked about aiming for a 70% humidity level, but here in Montana, that's not...
a little hard.
Yeah, that's not really that big. We're not in a desert. You're probably going to be fine. Just keep it out of the bathroom, the the kitchen, the laundry room, those areas where, along with the temperature, you can get some variation and humidity.
What do you think about aerating a wine? A lot of times there's a decanter, and with red wines, people like to open their bottles up and then pour it in a decanter. What are there any rules to that?
No, I don't think there's any rules. I think that obviously the canning does two things. It helps put air in the wine to help evolve that and open it up, but it also helps trap sediment that has built over time in an aged wine.
So it settles to the
bottom. Exactly. So it settles. You're pouring it, you know, all that sediment is now in your wine, so the decanter helps catch that when you pour it out of there. Oxygen is the friend of wine, but it also is its ultimate foe, so you just have to be careful with that. But I say you're not going to really ruin a wine by putting it in a decanter. The hardest part will be if you don't drink it all and putting it back in the bottle, or what you're going to...
Well, then you'll have to drink it all.
Exactly. You can invite me over.
I'll do that.
Yeah.
Well, Gina, thank you so much. Thanks
for
sharing this quilt with us and giving us such great information.
Don't be afraid to ask any other questions or come in, and we can help you find whatever you need.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers to you all. Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, has been produced with the assistance of Ken Siebert. Music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this show, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong. Thank you.